Good morning, everyone. Nice to have you here. Okay, case number one. Appeal 10-1194, Bielskis versus Louisville Ladders, and it's Mr. Cacciatore. Good morning.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is William Cacciatore, and I represent the appellant in this case, Rael Bielskis, and this is appeal from an order of the trial court as to defendant's motion for summary judgment on both the products liability count and the negligence count. In this case, the trial court barred plaintiff's expert, Neil Meisen. The trial court did find that the plaintiff's expert, Neil Meisen, was qualified by his past experience as an expert witness and background in this matter. So the only issue before this court is the whether or not the trial court, with all due respect to the trial court, erred in finding that the plaintiff's expert, Neil Meisen, did not exercise the methodology that is required of an expert in the federal court.
Mr. Cacciatore, yes. Suppose we were to agree with the district court that Mr. Meisen's failure to test his hypotheses regarding what caused that caster stem to snap, that would render his opinion as insufficiently reliable. Could you prove your case if he was only allowed to offer his opinion that it was a brittle fracture without more as to causation? Do you understand what I'm getting at? Because, both experts agreed that the break was a brittle fracture.
Correct.
So would that even be a fact and issue that a jury would need assistance in understanding?
Well, I would respectfully submit, Your Honors, that the jury would need that information. I didn't know what a brittle fracture was until I heard the testimony in this case from the experts. I think the jury needs to know what a brittle fracture is, and I think that is certainly within the skill and knowledge of the expert, in this case both experts, both the plaintiff and defendant's experts. And we do rely greatly upon the case of Smith versus Ford Motor Company decided by this court in 2000 on this issue. And in that case, Seventh Circuit Court held that the issue becomes one for the jury to decide once you have determined that there is enough skill and knowledge and experience of the expert to explain those matters. And that would be a question of fact I would respectfully submit, as in Smith versus Ford Motor Company, that the jury would be to consider the plaintiff's testimony and his reasons and background, therefore, and also that of the defendants. So in answer to your question, that would be our position on that. I think it's quite relevant.
What's the standard of review here?
In the summary judgment is de novo.
This particular issue is
abuse of discretion is another one of the issues in this case. So one is abuse of discretion, and the summary judgment, I think, is a noble standard. But in this case, as a matter of fact, in Smith, here it says, in this case, it holds after you determine, qualifications. It says the soundness of the factual underpinnings of the expert's analysis and the correctness of the expert's conclusions based on that analysis are factual matters to be determined by the trier of the fact.
Of course.
It's our position in this case that Neil Meisen did, of course, engage in the joint inspection with defendants' experts, in this case,
Of course, the comment in Smith is dicta. You would agree, would you not?
Regarded as dicta, but certainly the issue in that was whether or not the testimony of the expert witnesses would be barred by their methodology.
Look, there's no question that the Daubert factors are flexible, but at a minimum, an expert has to base his opinions on some recognized scientific method. How would you explain the methodology that Meisen used to form his opinion that castor stem broke as a result of too much stress? Thanks. What about his methodology for identifying design alternatives?
I understand your question, and I think it's important in this case to realize what is the product in question here. The product is a mini scaffold used by workers all over the United States that may be approximately 4 feet by 6 feet. It folds. It has four casters. In this case, Rio Bielkus was at the Motorola plant working on the ceiling when it collapsed. Now, it's not a complex product like an automobile or some other type of machinery or computers and that type. It's a simple thing that these type of fractures would be within the purview of Meisen or any other engineer who's had experience and familiarity with this type of a fracture. He did not feel, in his opinion, that it needed metallurgical tests or any type of tests or any type of designs. He felt this product was defective. Now, also in Smith, they didn't know whether there was a gearbox, but they weren't sure, whether it was a manufacturing defect or whether it was a design defect. In this case, this simple product, other than putting it under the microscope like they did, there was not much more anybody could do, nor did the defendant do anything more. He was able to identify
Didn't he essentially say this as a brittle fracture that could have been caused by excessive stress whatever the stub which is involved here.
Absolutely.
But it could have been, but I don't see where he isolated that as the cause.
I understand your question. I think he said there were other possibilities, but he decided, in his opinion, based upon his experience, it was caused by stress. That's what I understand.
Well, it may have been caused by stress, but how did he know what caused the stress? That's the ultimate question.
Well, I think he indicated that possibly it was too tight, as I recall his testimony. And if it was too tight, it would put too much stress, and there was a way to avoid that. He indicated a couple of possibilities.
He just said that could have been the cause, and he didn't say it was the cause.
And in this case, as well as in other products liability cases, there might be other possibilities, too, that may have caused an injury. But that, I think, becomes, once the expert is qualified, and for a question of fact for the jury to decide.
This is an unusual products liability case.
Pardon me?
It's a very unusual
yes.
products liability case, because ordinarily you have to show that the product was defective when it left the defendant's mm-hmm. control. And here, this scaffolding apparently was purchased by your client's former employer.
Absolutely, correct.
And then he gave it to your client, who had it for 8 years and used it on different jobs and bounced around in the back of his truck, and he was doing this acoustical tiling work with it. How, in a case like this, do you show that without any testimony about what the maintenance was, who was tightening nuts and bolts on this thing in the 10 whatever years it was in operation, that it goes back to a design defect that existed in the mid-1990s?
Well, it's a good question, and I appreciate that question. And I think that my answer to that is, should this product, the mini scalpel, have collapsed as it did in this case. There's no evidence that I know of in this case that there was any abuse of the product or misuse of the product, and it just happened. Now, we know there are lines of cases in products liability that sometimes, and I think Tweedy was one of those cases, but that, you know, some things the jury can infer that, even without an expert, but not in the federal
court. Yeah, but we don't want juries to guess either. That's
absolutely, and I understand that. But I think when you have both, especially in this case, which is a bit unusual, both of the experts have concluded in their opinions this was a brittle fracture.
Who installed the caster into the leg tube insert?
That would have been the former employer of Mr. Bielskis.
So the scaffold didn't come assembled.
That's correct.
The consumer assembled that portion of it.
Pardon me? Yes. Would have been the first owner, which was the former employer of the plaintiff.
Was he sued?
No.
No. I did want to ask you if you had another expert available who could have prepared a report in time for trial, because the continuance.
Because that was another point that we wanted to call to this honorable court's attention. And we had asked, when the court indicated he was going to bar Neil Meisen, we asked him to give us time to obtain another expert. And there was no trial scheduled at that time. There was no reason, and we conclude that since there was no trial, that the court abused its discretion in denying us the right to call another expert to try to prove this case in accordance with the court's desire. But that was foreclosed. And then immediately after that, the motion for summary judgment was filed. And here we are.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mr. Bone, good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Garrett Bame on behalf of Louis Villadel. Ladder. May it please the court, counsel. I'm just going to follow up on your last question, Justice Rovner, with regard to whether or not...
Just judge, but that's fine.
Judge, I'm sorry, Judge Rovner, whether or not...
Maybe the, you can call me justice. No.
Whether the plaintiff had another expert waiting in the wings, so to speak. And I note that today he doesn't identify whether or not he did or he did not. He just says that he should have been given leave to find another expert. And I think the standard of review is a very important issue to consider when looking at this issue. And I don't think that there is any way to say that the district court abuses discretion in denying the oral motion for leave to find a new expert.
Did you move to bar Meisen from testifying before or after the close of discovery?
The expert deposition closure date was in August, a month before the district court barred Mr. Meisen. I'm not sure of the exact date of the motion to bar. It may have been before. I can't say for sure.
But are you saying that about a month elapsed before the district court ruled on the motion, is that what you're saying?
It was a month after the closure of the time for taking the depositions of the experts. Certainly the time for disclosing the experts was months before that. But looking at back to the abuse of discretion question, was the district court's decision to deny the oral motion for leave to file and leave to disclose a new expert irrational? I don't believe so. The time for disclosing experts has certainly passed. Was it an error of law? Was it an error of fact? I don't believe it was either of those. And was it arbitrary? I don't think it qualifies as arbitrary either. Certainly district court has the ability to maintain its docket and had set a schedule for expert discovery, disclosure, and deposition discovery in this matter. That time had passed, and the district court found that the plaintiff and plaintiff's expert had not followed the correct methodology in order to reach reliable opinions. And based upon that, there's no reason to give leave for a new expert.
What did your expert do differently than Meisen to conclude that the leg sustained a brittle fracture?
I think the I just like to point out that I think the opinion as to the fracture was different between Mr. Meisen and defendant's experts. And defendant's experts looked at that fracture very closely and determined that there was a ductile fracture initially in the exterior portion of that caster stem, and then it snapped, which they called a cleavage or a brittle fracture. So it was kind of a mixture of the two. It wasn't just a snap. There was some of this tension going on where there was what Mr. Meisen talked as plastic deformation. There was this ductile nature to the break. But further, to answer your question, what defendants' experts did is they performed very careful gathering of data as to what the caster showed, the type of tensions that were applied, performed testing, performed calculation, and in general applied the proper engineering principles. Now, what did Mr. Meisen do? Mr. Meisen looked at the caster stem with his naked eye. He says that he looked through the stereo microscope for about a minute. But it was clear that at his deposition, he didn't know the kind of material that the caster stem was made of. And he didn't know the size of the caster stem. And he just decided, based upon apparently his years of experience, which certainly was sizable, that it was a brittle fracture. He didn't perform any testing. He doesn't explain how he performed any analysis based upon these basic engineering principles. He doesn't even identify what the basic engineering principles are. And based upon that, I think the district...
Well, you don't disagree that it was a brittle fracture, though. We've all agreed on that.
There was certainly a fracture, and there was an aspect of brittle fracture that resulted in the caster stem breaking, certainly.
I mean, I don't know where you go from there exactly, but I think everyone has agreed that it's a brittle fracture.
Right, and then you look at what was the cause of that fracture. And the cause of that fracture, based upon what's available in the record, suggests that it was a failure to install that caster correctly. And that caster was installed by a third party, not by the defendant. And when the product left the defendant's control, there's no evidence that there was any defect at that time.
Would examination alone ever be a satisfactory scientific...
I'm sorry, I did miss the first part.
Would what Mr. Meisen did, you know, just sort of examine the scaffold, would that ever be a satisfactory scientific method for a qualified expert to draw a conclusion?
The examining certainly has to take place, but I think you have to take the next step and perform the testing according to the scientific method. Without any testing, there's no reliability, and there's no evidence of any testing performed by Mr. Meisen in this case. So I guess my answer to your question would be no.
My goodness, he certainly was one experienced engineer.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
And, you know, sometimes a brand new doctor has to take 10 tests to figure out what's going on, and an experienced one will come in and look at the patient and say, this is what's going on.
Well, I think that may be. Whether or not that type of reaction is admissible in court is another question. And I think in opinions of this court, where there were qualified and experienced doctors involved, and they failed to perform the appropriate analysis and that exhibited a reliable methodology, those doctors' opinions were also stricken, and stricken properly.
Now, how should we deal with the Smith case? Because, you know, the case that says where a court's own action causes the need for a continuance, and that court then denies the continuance.
Well, I think if you look at the three cases that were cited in the Smith opinion in its dicta in discussing the motion for leave, the Fowler, the Fenner, and the Gabriel cases. Those were all instances in which the court actually had performed something that was improper or failed to act in a certain way. For instance, the court deputy failed to complete service in the appropriate time, or the court failed to construe its own orders correctly. That type of conduct is not present here and is not alleged here, but it's simply where the plaintiff failed to provide an expert with that exhibited the proper methodology, used the proper methodology, and consequently was stricken. It wasn't because of an action of the court. It was the plaintiff's action. With that, I don't have anything further. I appreciate the time here today, Your Honors.
Well, we appreciate having you all here. What would we do if you weren't? Mr. Cacciatore, how much time do we have?
3.5 minutes.
Let me just respond now to the fact that it should be understood that Neil Meisen, plaintiff's expert, was with the defendant experts. They did a joint inspection. They were there together. They did exactly the same thing. They took some photographs that we had photographs as well.
But did the defendant's experts then go away and continue doing something?
It was at the defendant's experts' facility where this joint inspection took place. And so that's what he did. That's what they did. The fact is that we talk about, counsel just mentioned that the cause was the installation. Okay? We don't know because it was a former employer that installed it. But we would maybe have been able to determine this at some point in this trial as to were there instructions as to how to install this. We don't know that yet about this. We didn't get that far in this case. And the rights of the plaintiff were just cut off, and we were not given an opportunity to pursue this case. It's an unusual case, I agree, and I would just respectfully ask you to consider the fact that this court just terminated our right to try to find another expert. We did not have an expert in the waiting. That was a question you asked me earlier that I guess I didn't respond to. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you both. Thank you both very much.
You're welcome.
The case will be taken under advisement.